I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Oliver Darkshire. He is the author of a new book, Once Upon a Tome. It is extremely well written and it is charming, but at the same time, it's a world that I did not know existed. That is, inside a rare bookseller's shop. You enter into this, and I kept having moments thinking I was entering into a Twilight Zone episode, that the 21st century would disappear and I would be in the 18th century and all these books would be new. Oliver had a first day at Sutherland's answering what looked to be an opportunity for an apprentice. Oliver, can you take us to that moment that you opened the door, your experiences, what you saw, what it felt like? Thank you.
Well, initially, I tried to open the wrong door. There are two double door coming into Sutherland's, and they keep one locked at all times for literally no reason. So I opened that one. I didn't, and I slammed into it. And then I, feeling embarrassed myself, walked into the second one. And the atmosphere hits you like a wall as you come into an old bookstore like that. The books muffle the sound. So you can hear the traffic, the noises, people screaming on Piccadilly, and then you enter the store, and it's just silence. And that smell, that velocor, the wistfulness of old books, I think they call it, just hits you like a physical object almost, because you've stepped into a completely new or old environment. But everyone is working quite studiously around you, almost like you walked into an academic environment or, a museum or something.
And you were there to be an apprentice. Now, that is an unusual occupation compared to what our system is here on the other side of the Atlantic. What does it mean? What does it mean that some of your salary, which was antiquarian, is going to be picked up by the Antiquarian Association? How does it work for you?
Gosh, so an apprenticeship really just means that you're expected to learn on the job and that you might go into it with no qualifications or no acumen, no expectation that you would know anything, and they would train you and pay you that even only a little for the job. The Antiquarian Booksellers Association, which is a thing, realized that they were running out of booksellers at one point, it turns out. And they thought that in order to combat this, nobody knew the trade existed, they would pay some bookstores a little, some of the salary to take on people like myself.
And so you walk in with the expectation you're going to be interviewed to see if you suit an antiquarian rare book selling presence, and you're interviewed by, is it James or Andrew who comes to you?
It's Andrew who interviews me in the first instance, yeah.
And Andrew sits down and asks a series of questions that strike you as unusual. You're trying to qualify, you're trying to please him. Chiefly what they want to make sure is that you stay longer than 6 weeks and don't run screaming from the establishment. Is that their concern?
It is. They had a bunch of people on the front desk who only stayed a year because they wanted to work in museums or libraries, and they thought a bookstore was a good first step. But the staff couldn't cope with people only staying a year. It was like a blink of the eye to them. They said staff were leaving too fast. This is unreasonable, outrageous. So they wanted someone who was going to stay for a much longer period of time so everyone could adjust to learn their names. That's where I come in.
What are you thinking as you're sitting there being interviewed for an occupation I did not know existed? A rare bookseller. What sort of questions did you think they were going to ask you? What did they ask you? We're trying to educate young people who are interested in being rare booksellers, Oliver.
I thought they would ask me about books or, maybe what I read or, what I was interested in selling. And really, he sat me down and he asked me if it was true that I played the trombone. And once he'd ascertained that, he started to chat about, you know, the fact that people were leaving the bookstore. Once he'd established that I wanted somewhere to stay and learn, he just sort of went into general conversation, really. It was the strangest interview I've ever had in my life. No other reference was made to my hastily cobbled together CV at all. He wanted to know I was someone he could work with, spend every day in a desk next to.
Desks, that's important, because eventually we have to walk around the shop. I picture, because I've looked for photographs, there's a very attractive website that Oliver helped sponsor in the beginning, but it doesn't give pictures of long aisles of books at 12 or 15 feet high and dark recesses where something might be lurking. What was it like to you? Do you have a memory of that first day?
I do. Imagine a Victorian gentleman's study with a great big wooden desk in the middle, bookstore surrounding it on all sides filled with books, and then cobble about 10 of those together and just mash them into one building with a staircase in the middle. So they're kind of adjoining each other in a higgledy-piggledy fashion. You've got one person looking onto someone else's desk and their pile of books between them. It's about 10 different studies mashed into the same building over several floors. So everyone working at their own desk, but almost if the buildings have been crushed together. It's a very strange phenomenon.
Now, the building itself becomes a character in your book, because I was always ready for you to say there's a door we've discovered behind a stack of books. But first, let's go up the staircase. There's a mezzanine, but there's another establishment on the mezzanine, or was that after it was rebuilt? What was there when you first arrived?
When I first arrived, the mezzanine had already been reclaimed by another business who we never really see, but they stomp a lot. Sutherlands did own it at one point about a century ago, but they call it the mezzanine experiment now, and we don't speak of it much. I gather something happened, and we no longer have that floor.
But you can enter it through a secret fire door. I don't know. I got lost. I tried to draw a map. Also important, do you remember looking at the front window the first day and realizing how important it was to guard the tomes in the front window?
Yeah, dangerous, the front window. They have a special awning that comes out. You have to get it with a hooked pole and drag it out over the window. Because of the sunlight, the books in the window are very vulnerable to being hit by the light. And so someone has to come out and yank the awning and drag it out every day and try not to hit anyone as you do so. It's quite the experience. You get good at it after a while.
And the accounting in the books, you eventually lead us to where that is. Did you look around you for doors around you where you were eventually going to have to figure out people were hiding? On your first day, I'm trying to imagine what it felt like.
I mean, you can fit a surprising amount of people under a staircase, it turns out, if you can believe that. I didn't notice that the main accountant was there until, you know, because it's shadowy under that staircase, until I realized there was an entire work area kind of stuffed in the shadow of this great grand staircase underneath it where she worked. It was a surprise. I did not expect it.
And you were given, or maybe not the first day, but once the decision was made that we'll take Oliver on as an apprentice, you are now the junior of juniors at an establishment that's several hundred years old and surrounded by books that are probably much older. You were given a desk, and I tried to imagine the desk. You emphasized that it was too small for you. Where was it, and how small?
They perched it right in front of the double doors on the way in, about 2 feet back, because you're supposed to be the youngest member of staff. You're the kind of a dog's body. You're the person who gets in the way of people who come in with questions, stops them irritating everyone else, I suppose. And it was this desk was, it would, they, the way it was described to me by my colleagues, it was made for, they said, a Victorian gentlewoman. And people were smaller, I guess, 100 years ago, and very dainty. And I could not fit underneath it. So I had to kind of ride it side saddle. It's sort of my, in order to fit anywhere near. I just could, this is more of a table for me, like a bedside table, this desk. I had to work on it for years.
And you were put towards the front of the shop so that the first person a potential customer or bookseller would come across was you. Is that where you were? Or were you in the back of the shop?
Right at the front, first line of defense against an onslaught.
All right, here's Oliver, and a desk much too small for him. Would have been small in any era for anyone. And he builds it up. I think you put books under the legs to make it a little taller. What did you do?
A little taller, yeah. I had a chair that was quite low, so I could sort of slide under it. It was a process.
All right, he's in the front of the shop. The door is going to open, and when we come back, we're going to meet the personalities that attend a rare bookseller. And Oliver Darkshire is the first, as he says, the first line of defense, actually, the person to greet the curious. The book is Once Upon a Tome. Oliver Darkshire is the author. The Misadventures of a Rare Bookseller, Henry Sutherland Limited, on Sackville Street in London. I'm John Beck.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.